Democrats think they got the better deal in the bipartisan budget plan that averted a government shutdown last week. That plan, by the way, is going to be voted on this afternoon. And President Trump is tweeting that perhaps we need a good government shutdown in September. We are going to talk with two guests from different perspectives about this story and many others in a special midweek Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. But first, Bill Martens joins me because this is our spring membership drive and because you are the most important source of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio. We are asking you for your support. We are here today to raise the money that pays for the programs that you enjoy, programs like this one. Give your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Last hour, we heard from five listeners. Thank you to everyone who pledged. The goal now is to get 30 pledges by 8 o'clock, and these goals are set up to make sure that Wisconsin Public Radio has the money to pay for the programs you rely on.
Show your support during this spring membership drive, which is also our centennial year. You want to make the programs you enjoy on WPR possible today, tomorrow, and I hope for the next 100 years. Help meet that goal. It starts with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
A large slice of WPR's budget pie, the biggest slice, in fact, is listener support. So while all of our funding sources, the state and federal governments and businesses, are important, of course, your contribution makes a huge difference. WPR is the amazing service that it is, thanks to listener support. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
The world is constantly changing. It's hard to keep up. I'll say it's every 12 hours there's a new lead story. As a listener, you rely on WPR to find out what's new and important every single day.
WPR members make the up-to-date news and information you hear every day possible. It's your turn to invest in the programs. Your contribution of $5 or $10 a month keeps the news and conversations relevant and on the air for everyone to enjoy. WPR needs your support. Your membership makes a difference. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
2017 marks WPR's first 100 years, and what better way to honor the occasion than with a wonderful tradition? Ask for the latest WPR artist mug when you give $13 a month. This year's mug is inspired by one of the very first WPR programs, Let's Draw, which taught art in classrooms through the radio. The design is colorful and fun, with artwork by schoolchildren throughout Wisconsin from the 1950s. It represents our timeless commitment to education and the arts. From our earliest days to today, we're all about lifelong learning. Celebrate with us. Ask for your mug when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Get your mug now and support the programs that you value at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Joy Cardine with Bill Martens asking for your support during our spring membership drive.
Thank you for your contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio as an investment in your future listening. Think of your contribution, I should say. Give us a few minutes of your time and your donation in any amount, and in return, you'll get lots of great programs. You can donate at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And in just a few minutes, you'll have made a wise investment, one that pays dividends every day.
All right, Bill, we actually have 35 pledges to make during this hour. Mm-hmm. And by the way, that was Scott Ross sneezing, but bless you. And we have one pledge toward that 35 pledge goal, so that's a good start.
He'll sneeze every time we get a pledge, so keep those pledges coming. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. 2017 marks 100 years of Wisconsin Public Radio. Listeners like you make it all possible. Your gift today ensures a bright future for the programs you depend on every day. Make that centennial gift now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
All right, thank you, Bill. We'll check in with you later. Time now for this special midweek Week in Review. We have with us two guests from different perspectives to talk about some of the top stories in state and national politics so far this week. We'll have more to talk about on Friday, I'm sure. Let's welcome our guest. Scott Ross is here. He is the executive director of One Wisconsin Now. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And Rick Essenberg is with us, president and general counsel of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, or WILL. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. I'm not going to sneeze every time you get a pledge, but my dog might bark.
So, well, that's okay.
You know, maybe we'll do that.
We like that. We like background noises. Rick, we'll start with you. Your general thoughts on this spending bill agreement that is supposed to avert a government shutdown until September. Do you think that this was a good deal, good enough? Is it a loser?
Well, it's a bill. There's a strong bias in favor of the status quo. I mean, we have an issue here in that neither party has an effective governing majority in Congress, given the rules that exist in the Senate. And so this makes it very, very difficult for either party to implement much of its program. This, I think, was an agreement to sort of kick the difficult issues down the road. But they're going to be no less difficult for that, and I think that we really have two things that we need to talk about. One are the particulars of the spending bill, and the other is how we want Congress to operate. Do we really want a situation where you basically have to get 60 votes in the Senate to get anything significant done? And when we have that debate, we ought to focus not on whose ox is being gored today. Do these rules help our side today or don't they? But whether or not these are the right rules by which we should proceed.
Yeah, we'll get to the rules in just a moment. As President Trump suggested, the rules should be changed. But Scott, who do you think the particulars of this deal? Do you think that this was a Democrats got more of what they wanted in this plan over Republicans?
Oh, I think that the Democratic minority was able to roll the bronzed dealmaker in the White House. And, you know, everything from Planned Parenthood, stripping Planned Parenthood of funding wasn't in it. 160 riders on environmental things like environmental regulations were not realized. The fact that I think there's over $1 billion increase, or I'm sorry, $2 billion increase for the National Institute for Health, and then of course the vaunted border wall across the Mexican border, which we still do not know. We've been asking Paul Ryan to tell us how thick the wall will be, let alone how long it will be, but he has not been able to provide that information. But that was also shut down. I think that the Democrats flexed their muscles as best they could, and I think that they were able to stop some really bad ideas that were coming out of the Republican budget, and we'll see how long they continue. I would be remiss if I didn't, you know, say something about the fact that, you know, Professor Essenberg is decrying the use of the filibuster. After for 8 years, we saw every single year the record number of filibusters or threatened filibusters increase every single year while Obama was the president. So I think that that's a little bit disingenuous to start off the morning. But, you know, the rules are what they are. And the Republicans played by the rules when Obama was the president, and now they must play by those same rules when Trump is in the White House.
Yeah, and I will get to the rules again in just a moment, but I know President Trump last night or late yesterday was crowing a bit about the increase in defense spending that this spending bill contains, and it took some shots at the Democrats, saying, you know, hey, we got a good defense spending increase here, and we're not crowing about it like the Democrats are crowing about what they got. Rick, do you think this is something that the Democrats should be crowing about or not?
Well, look, I mean, look at everything that Scott says that the Democrats accomplished. They accomplished nothing other than to prevent things from happening. And when President Obama was in the White House, what the Republicans largely were able to do is prevent things from happening. Now, you know, as a limited government conservative, I might be inclined to support that type of thing, because as a general rule, I think that the federal government should do less. But it's not clear to me that the proper thing, that the best thing, is always going to be what can get a supermajority of votes in Congress. This is a strong, there's a strong bias in favor of the status quo. And my point is not that the Democrats did something wrong by, you know, trying to block the things that they didn't agree with. My point is that we ought to have a serious discussion about whether or not this is the way we want Congress to function. And when we have that discussion, we ought to remember that there are no permanent victories in politics. And the rules that help us today will hurt us tomorrow and vice versa. And we ought to turn off the partisan spin machine, stop making the talking points, and have a substantial discussion about how we want our government to operate.
Well, yeah, President Trump said that this deal is the result of Republicans not having 60 votes in the Senate, so he says it may be time to change the rules to allow spending bills to pass with a simple majority and not 60 votes. I know you wanted to change the rules, and Mitch McConnell, however, said that there is an overwhelming majority on a bipartisan basis not interested in changing the way the Senate operates on the legislative calendar. That will not happen. So Mitch McConnell says the rules won't be changed. Scott, how do you feel about the idea of changing the rules so a simple majority is all that's needed? We just heard the dog moan.
Well, I'd say this. We can always evolve. Our legislative process can certainly always evolve. And I think two things come out of this. One is that I don't necessarily think that, you know, of all the reasons to change the rules and how the Senate, the world's most august body, deliberates, should be changed just because Rick's party is headed by Donald Trump now. The second thing I think is that Donald Trump appears to be the only person in the United States of America who's willing to publicly say that bipartisanship is a bad thing when it actually happens. And I think those are the two things that come out of it.
Yeah. So you want a discussion? Are you in favor of Rick, of the simple majority versus 60?
I think that the Senate has there's a role to have the Senate be a deliberative body that acts as a brake on things and slows things down. But I almost would, you know, when it comes to the filibuster, I guess I would like to go back to the filibuster of the old days, that if you want a filibuster, you ought to be willing to stop the operation of the body, that you ought to be willing to stand up like Jimmy Stewart and, you know, talk for as long as you need to have. It's not clear to me that the filibuster, which was, I think, initially developed as something that was supposed to allow this greatest deliberative body in the world to keep deliberating as long as a significant percentage of the members wanted to do so, to turn it into sort of a de facto requirement of a supermajority. I don't know that that's necessarily the way to go, whatever we wind up doing, it ought not to be because this is the thing that would benefit us politically today, because the fact of the matter is that it won't benefit us politically tomorrow.
So that $1 trillion plus spending bill, which would fund most government operations through September, was made public on Monday, tentatively scheduled for a House vote today. We'll follow up on that in our regular Week in Review. You know, we have a couple more minutes in this segment, and I do want to add a topic that that I think our listeners and you have something to say about. In remarks yesterday, Hillary Clinton said that if it were not for that controversial letter from FBI Director James Comey and what she termed Russian WikiLeaks, she would be sitting in the Oval Office right now. She did acknowledge some personal responsibility for her loss. and said her campaign made mistakes. But she said if it weren't for WikiLeaks and FBI Director James Comey, she would have won the election. Scott, do you think that's true or not?
Well, I think, yeah, I definitely think that's true. And I know, I think Rick and I are probably going to disagree on this one, but I just wanted to just for 1 second pause back to something that Rick said related to the filibuster. He and I are in total agreement. I think if you're going to filibuster, you should be on the floor. You should have to make that. I think that was a tactical mistake by Harry Reid, who was a pretty good leader, but that was a tactical mistake when the Democrats were in charge of everything that he allowed a de facto 50, you know, 60 vote margin for every piece of legislation, and the Republicans exploited that. But I do think that Hillary Clinton has a great point. I mean, it was unprecedented what James Comey did. And at the same time that was happening, he was claiming that there was nothing when it came to Donald Trump, who we obviously have seen from everything that's gone on since the election, the fact that his administration is so in the pocket of the Russians and Vladimir Putin. And I think that she made some great points. Yes, Comey had a huge influence on the election. I think that she owned the fact that her campaign made a lot of mistakes. I mean, you know, we will all in the state of Wisconsin, whether you're a Democrat, Republican, Independent, Libertarian, all wonder with amazement why Hillary Clinton never campaigned in the state of Wisconsin. But again, I just want to make sure that we're not, you know, and it's newsworthy because she went out and spoke. But I just want to make sure that the sort of autopsies, the continuing autopsies that go on with her campaign were, this seems to be the first time that that's happened. Mitt Romney didn't have a long stretch of those things. John McCain didn't have a long stretch of those things. I just want to make sure we keep everything in perspective and that everybody's treated fairly and equally.
Yeah. Your reaction to Hillary Clinton's comments, Rick?
Look, you know, Jim Comey didn't make her set up a homebrewed server on her home, which jeopardized national security, and I think no matter what Comey said, clearly violated the law. He gave her a gift that she didn't deserve when he exonerated her, and if she wanted to benefit by that, she's got to accept the fact that, you know, people were going to raise serious questions about what she did. I think that the role of the Russians needs to be clearly examined. But nobody has claimed that the emails that were leaked were not genuine. You know, the fact of the matter is that Hillary Clinton was a very, very poor candidate, and she may have been virtually the only Democrat around who could have managed to lose to a candidate like Donald Trump. And I think that her comments reflect the fact that her political career is over because nobody likes a sore loser, and that's the way that she came off. I think it would have been better if she had, you know, acted with a bit more grace, but, you know, Hillary Clinton doesn't do that. The Clintons in general don't do that.
Yeah. And briefly, President Trump, in a series of tweets, seemed to respond to Clinton with this: FBI Director Comey was the best thing that ever happened to Hillary Clinton in that he gave her a free pass for many bad deeds. The phony Trump-Russia story was an excuse used by the Democrats as justification for losing the election. Rick, do you agree or not?
Well, I mean, you know, I guess some of that tracks what I said. I would prefer that, you know, President Trump also, you know, stay above the fray on this. I don't think that we're benefited by the two of them sniping at each other about what happened in the last election.
And what do you think, Scott?
Well, I mean, you know, when there's the high road and the low road, we always know where which Donald Trump is, where Donald Trump's going to go, and he's going to be looking up. I think that one other thing that, and I think Hillary Clinton was too classy to really bring this up, so I'm going to do it because I'm less classy than she, apparently. And that is the notion of the Clinton Foundation. Like, that was such a topic of debate during the election because the right wanted to exploit, you know, her as nefarious, as using insider contacts, as doing things. All that the Clinton Foundation did was try and relieve people of the suffering from AIDS all across the planet. And we see, you know, after Trump went after her over and over and over again on this, that his own daughter, who is an unpaid, you know, denizen of the White House, is raising money for her foundation off of foreign leaders. I mean, it's just, it is insane in the same, in the way that the, you know, the sins that he speaks of, Trump does, are ones he is exactly guilty of committing.
When we come back, we are way past our break time. We will talk about this new bill that would discipline students who disrupt speakers on UW campuses and more during this midweek edition of the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We'll get back to our midweek in review discussion in just a moment. But Bill Martins joins me now because this is our spring membership drive. And your gift right now is so important. It keeps programs like the Joy Cardine Show on the air. So invest in your future listening with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We are looking for 30 more pledges in the next half an hour. Make your donation now and support the programs you enjoy. Joy at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
As we celebrate our centennial year, we'd like to say thank you to our listeners. You're a big part of what has brought WPR this far. You helped create engaging programming that people rely on every day. Thank you for making a big impact on our first 100 years.
And we've got a bright future ahead of us. And while it's impossible to predict what the next 100 years will bring, one thing will stay the same. They're only possible with your support. We're in this together, folks. So your gift helps today, and it helps build a strong tomorrow and next 100 years. So give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
At Wisconsin Public Radio, you get to choose how much you give. A contribution of any amount makes a difference. Here's a suggested amount. Maybe how about the same amount you pay a month for Netflix or cable?
Or coffee, which, like WPR, is probably something you look forward to every day, right? So pledge now. You pick the amount. Your pledge makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Still looking for 30 pledges during this hour to reach our goal. We're trying to be brief during these pledge breaks so we can get to as much conversation with our two guests from different perspectives on the issues of the day. So please don't delay. Make your pledge now of any amount, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Show your support for Wisconsin Public Radio and remember to ask for our fun new artist mug. It's yours when you give $13 a month or more, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
All right, thank you, Bill. Keep us posted. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Scott Ross, the Executive Director of One Wisconsin Now, and Rick Essenberg, the President and General Counsel of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, or WILL. We are talking about some of the stories making news this week. This is a midweek edition of the Week in Review. Let's talk about this bill for that deals with free speech on UW campuses. We did talk with the author of the bill, Republican Representative Jesse Kramer, who told us on Monday that it protects free speech rights at UW system schools by disciplining students who interfere with campus speakers or events. I know, Scott, your group, One Wisconsin Now, was not happy with this legislation. What's wrong with it?
Well, first of all, it's just glaringly unconstitutional. The idea that you would—I mean, if you read the bill itself, it basically creates the situation where you have prior restraint against people, you know, exercising their free speech rights on campus, and I think you saw just—I mean, you yourself, when you had, you know, Jesse Kramer on here, when you spoke of constitutional concerns that former head of UW had, he immediately said, "Yeah, we're going to change the bill." Like, how could you be in a place where you would offer a bill that, you know, 48 hours later you're saying, "Oh wait, I've got to change it because it's unconstitutional." I mean, top to bottom, this was just a ridiculous bill. I mean, everything from the idea of punishing people when protections are already in place. If somebody is disruptive and commits disorderly conduct on campus, they can be arrested for that and prosecuted and dealt with that way. We don't need a special Republican safe space, you know, created on our campuses. I think the second thing is, and this is where I think, you know, as bad as it is for students, it may be even worse for professors, because it basically says they can't offer opinions on controversial topics. Well, you know, we live in an era where the Republicans think the jury is still out on science when it comes to things like climate change. So does this mean if you do research and publish research on climate change that you are weighing into a you are verbose? I mean, you know, you're violating Jesse Kramer's rule and offering your opinion on a particular subject. I think that, you know, Noah Williams from the UW, who was a campaign advisor to Scott Walker and Marco Rubio, was putting out nonsense science in my belief, nonsense science about the manufacturing and ag tax credit somehow creating jobs when there's no evidence that it does. Wouldn't that be, under this, a prohibited form of speech because he is a faculty member of the university? So we're not just talking about, you know, liberal ideas being squelched. We're talking about conservative ideas being squelched. And, you know, it's beyond the pale of just how unconstitutional this bill is, in my opinion.
The offenses described in the bill, violent, abusive, indecent, profane, boisterous, obscene, unreasonably loud, or other disorderly conduct, is the language that many believe is vague and unconstitutional. And as you mentioned, Scott, Representative Kramer did say on the state capitol report that he thought it was also too broad, too vague, and that he was going to change that language, offer an amendment to change that. Rick, do you agree? Does that need to be tighter?
I think the language needs to be tighter, but let me circle back and talk about the bill in general, because it seems to me that this is something that the left and right ought to be able to agree on. I have the bill right in front of me. I've spent some time going through it. Based upon Scott's description of it, I wonder whether he read it. He certainly doesn't understand it. Perhaps if I clarify, we'll be able to reach some agreement. This bill makes clear that student and faculty, and quote, have freedom to discuss any problem that presents itself as the First Amendment permits. It charges the university to ensure the fullest degree of intellectual freedom and academic expression. It does say that any person lawfully present on campus may protest and demonstrate there, and it says that it is not the role of the university to shield individuals from speech that they find unwelcome, disagreeable, or even deeply offensive. So it's a very, very robust commitment to free expression on campus. It does say that the university ought to discipline people, not who simply engage in, you know, boisterous, loud, profane language. That's only half of what it says. It says that the university ought to discipline people who engage in such behavior that prevents the expressive activity of others. And so the question that I have for the people who oppose the bill is, are you really arguing that the university ought to permit, or that there's some constitutional right for people to physically intimidate speakers, for people to physically block entry into an event, for speakers to be shouted down, for people to bring air horns and drown them out so that they can't be heard? I don't think that anybody agrees with that.
In my view,
I think that, you know, I'm a lawyer. I think that language can be tweaked to make clear that interfering with the speech of others it's not caused by the expression of a particular viewpoint, but is limited to action that actually prevents expressive activity.
All right. So, Scott, let's separate it. The students and others who are disrupting a speech and using air horns or booing and shouting down and not allowing someone else to speak, should that be okay?
They can. Here's the thing. If somebody is violating the law in terms of being disruptive in an event, they can be dealt with by the law. We don't need extra protections written into the law because, you know, Robin Voss and Jesse Kramer have a problem with the University of Wisconsin system and students expressing themselves. The fact is that this is going to have a chilling effect on the community's ability to exercise its First Amendment rights, because the possibility of being penalized for exercising your rights, whether it's the students who could face expulsion or the professors who may not conduct research, those are the things at play. And let's just be very clear that the Fourth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in ACLU versus Mull in 2005, and courts within the Fifth Circuit have found that college campuses to be limited public forums. That means that they are not traditional public forums such as public streets or parks available to anyone to use at any time. Because, you know, and the fact is that you may, you absolutely have a right to free speech. And if, for instance, Berkeley said, Ann Coulter, you do not have a right to come onto our campus, stand on the sidewalk and espouse your views, and you will be arrested for that, I would be with, you know, with the folks who are fighting against that every step of the way. But the fact is, under the First Amendment, you are not guaranteed to be paid to come on campus to provoke people. You're not. And there are different different rules in place. And all this is Jesse Kramer and Robin Voss trying to limit and squelch speech on campus. And it ain't the first time. I mean, let's not forget that part of what the Republican agenda has been is to restrict the right of students on campus to be able to exercise their right to vote in the things that they did, including and not limited to the fact that they got rid of the funding for the United Council, which was the one organization on campus that was recruiting people to register to vote in a nonpartisan way and encouraging them to exercise their rights. This is about trying to intimidate and shut down student voices, and they're doing it with professors, too, under this bill.
Well, you know, Scott can say that emphatically, but I just read the language in the bill, and it clearly doesn't do that.
Bill,
the only way – no, let me finish. The only thing that it does is it charges the university to protect the freedom of expression by saying, look, you can't let people discriminate on the basis of viewpoint. You can't let people drown out or physically intimidate or physically block access to an event. You've got to do something about that. The other thing, the bill does not have anything to do, and it doesn't address whether people can, professors can do research and express points of view. It says that the university as an institution should strive not to take positions on public policy, and the university as an institution should not require its members to affirm any particular political position. But it makes absolutely clear, and it repeats again and again and again, and it limits the ability of the university to ever restrict the right of student and faculty members to express themselves on any issue. Now, you know, again, we're going to put out a paper and we're going to suggest some things that can make the protection of freedom of expression stronger in these bills. But that's the purpose. That's what's happening. And the fact that you don't like Jesse Kramer and you don't like Robin Voss, you know, doesn't mean that you ought not to be willing to stand up for freedom of expression on campus. That's something that we used to be able to agree on and we ought to be able to agree on again.
Scott?
Yeah, no, I mean, this legislation is about shutting down free speech. And, you know, if they pass this bill, we're all going to court. It's for sure on that.
Well, we'll leave it there because we actually are past our break time. And Bill Martins is waiting patiently to give me an update on how we are doing during our spring membership drive. I know that we are working toward a goal of 35 pledges. How many more do we have to go, Bill?
25. So we've got a little bit of work to do in these last 20 minutes to reach that goal. Your support keeps WPR strong. It helps pay for the Joy Cardine Show. So make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This has been, as it often is, a lively discussion with two guests from different perspectives, but it's, for the most part, very civil.
Yes.
And we're not shouting each other down here on the Week in Review or this Mid-Week in Review. We are hearing different perspectives. We also welcome your perspective during these conversations. Put a value on that and make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
New members are important to Wisconsin Public Radio, and a big thank you to all the first-time donors who've made their pledge so far this hour. If you've never given, know that your new membership will help keep Wisconsin Public Radio the strong, reliable station that you depend on. You decide the amount, for example, let's say $5 or $10 a month, then give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. This is a Mid-Week in Review. We are talking about some of the top stories in the news this week, state and national politics, with two guests from different political viewpoints. Rick Essenberg is with us. He's president and general counsel of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. And Scott Ross is the executive director of One Wisconsin Now. Let's see, we've talked about lots of stuff already this hour. I did want to get to a story that was in the headlines yesterday. It made national news when a jury decided that there should be charges filed against the Milwaukee County jailers who were a part of the decision of it was the death of Terrell Thomas, an inmate who died of dehydration while he was in custody. A jury recommended that 7 county jail staffers be charged with abuse. However, Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark was not a target of the investigation or this case. Rick, your reaction to this this verdict?
Well, whenever anyone dies in custody, it's an extremely serious matter. And I think that it's very important when it happens for us to dial down the rhetoric and not assume positions based upon what we think will advance our partisan position, what our ideological preferences are, or what we want to be true. And in this case, there was an inquest. I can't say that I followed the ins and outs of it, but from what I do know, there are very, very substantial questions raised regarding the behavior of the correctional officers involved. It doesn't seem that it would have been possible for this guy to die in custody without some very, very tragic miscommunication at best and deliberate indifference to his condition at worst. And so I think that, the inquest has gone forward. I think we should allow the process to play itself out. I think with respect to public officials who have responsibility for the jail, they ought to be willing to say that this was a tragic event, that it ought not to happen, and that steps ought to be taken to I guess you can never ensure that bad things won't happen, but to at least to make it very, very unlikely that this will happen in the future. Whatever we think of people who have been incarcerated, they don't deserve to die in custody in this way. And I think that the people of Milwaukee and the people of the state of Wisconsin have a right to know why this happened and to know that steps are going to be taken to prevent it from happening in the future.
Scott, even though Clark was not a target, how much responsibility do you think he shoulders as sheriff in this death?
Well, I'd say a couple things. First, I'd say I think Rick has a very reasonable, mm-hmm. Response to what's going on down in Sheriff Clark's jail. I think that David Clark has huge responsibility here. The buck should stop with him. And I think that, if you look at the details, not just of this case, where let's not kid ourselves, confining somebody and denying them water for a week is torture. Like there cannot be any sort of debate, I think, on that. But he and he is not the only one to have perished under the custody of David Clark. We know that a newborn baby died, and because the mother was forced to give birth on her cell floor. We know that Sheriff Clark's jail, that he's being sued for a number of pregnant women, were treated in terms of being shackled and such. And the thing is that, listen, there's obviously there needs to be top to bottom changes made at Sheriff Clark's jail. I think the thing that makes, people so suspect, whether you're Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal, is the obstinance in the way Sheriff Clark handles this, which is he is touring around the country, I believe, on a book tour. He has hundreds of thousands of dollars of travel, you know, for doing political stuff throughout 2016 and 15. And I think that that's where, you know, his just irresponsibility in not just the way the jail's been operating, but his unwillingness to take or give any quarter to the idea that what's going on there is wrong, is what makes people so, you know, as Rick said, like, you know, Clark touches a nerve with the left. That is for sure. And I think that that is a lot of the reason for that, because this law and order guy won't take any responsibility for his actions.
And some Democratic lawmakers and others have called on Governor Walker to remove Clark as sheriff. And that is something that Walker said he would not do. Scott, are you among those calling for Walker to take action against Clark?
Well, it's a slippery slope because the idea that, you know, Scott Walker could come into a municipality where somebody was, you know, elected by the voters and just remove them from office, I think, is a scary thing. We saw that previously with Ken Kratz up in Calumet, I believe, when he was, you know, the DA up there and then had been sexting with a, yeah, you know, that he was removed.
That guy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think what sort of made me scratch my head, and, you know, I'm a head scratcher for a lot of reasons, but what made me scratch my head was when Walker said that he didn't know the science. You know, listen, science tells you if you deny somebody water for 7 days, they will die. And if you do that behind bars as a jailer, then you are committing, you know, you are in a sense committing the act that creates their death. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I don't think there's any science to it. I think Scott Walker doesn't want to cheese off the right wing Tea Party folks who support Sheriff Clark, especially as Walker goes into an election year, and I think that's what that was about.
Yeah, and I think Walker also said, you know, that's removing him from office would be up to voters. Rick, what about that?
Well, I don't know that he should remove him from office. I think it is up to voters, and I think that, you know, it's not as if David Clark is, you know, is the warden of the jail and he's in there managing it on a day-to-day basis. It seems to me that and I think when he said he didn't understand the science, I think what he's expressing, some commendable modesty in saying, look, I don't know exactly what happened there. I haven't been in the inquest and I don't know that. I think that what's important for Sheriff Clark is not so much retrospective but prospective. I think that he needs to get out in front of this. He needs to say, look, this is, not because of the politics of it, but just because it's the right thing to do. To say, look, this is a very, very serious problem. I'm angry that this happened, and I'm going to do something about it. Now, I don't fault him, perhaps, for not making statements during the course of the inquest, but at some point, when this type of stuff is going on, you have to address it, and, if it were a law enforcement officer was associated with the Republicans or the Democrats, I'd say the same thing. It needs to be addressed because this type of thing just shouldn't happen.
Let me say this, and let me say to all the wonderful listeners, and Joe, you're always such a gracious host. I think Rick and I are going to disagree on this one thing. So if you agree with Rick, make a donation. If you agree with me, make a donation. If you think we're both blowhards, double your donation.
That's fair.
But let me just say this.
There's the winner.
Let me just say this. Scott Walker said he wouldn't talk about the science because of the science. This is a guy who is trying to get the federal government to put a waiver so that anybody who's a childless adult who wants, you know, food stamps has to take a drug test. So he's presuming that anybody who wants to have, who's a childless adult who wants food stamps is somehow a drug addict, but he's not willing to talk about the science of somebody who has been a longtime ally of his in terms of David Clark. So I think that's important that we note if we're talking about the inconsistencies of our governor.
Let me very unfairly switch to another topic we didn't get to yet, and we only have a couple of minutes. The health care overhaul, the bill that would replace the Affordable Care Act. House Republicans say they are getting closer to passing a bill to overhaul the healthcare system, but the votes aren't there yet. In fact, they're losing more. Apparently, they are trying to balance the concerns of moderate Republicans who want to protect those with pre-existing conditions and conservatives who want to lift that requirement that insurers charge sick and healthy people the same rates. President Trump yesterday said the time to vote is now. Rick, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, you know, we have a problem with the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act, I think, in response to what was a relatively limited problem in our healthcare system, decided to overhaul the whole system, and it wound up creating exchanges where we're trying to force people to buy products that they don't really want, and we're trying to enforce insurers to sell products that they don't really want to sell. And the result of that is that the actuarially the exchanges are upside down, and if they're not in a death spiral, they're on the precipice of a death spiral. So the question is, what do we do about this? The debate here is not whether to protect people with pre-existing conditions. The debate here is how to protect people with pre-existing conditions. And although it's commonly misdescribed in the press, what the current proposal does is it says, look, states, if you want to try a different approach, you can do it, but only under the following conditions. You can eliminate community rating and the requirement that insurance policies be issued to uninsured persons who have pre-existing conditions. But then you got to do something else. You have to establish a high-risk pool that will protect those people and provide them with the care that they would otherwise need. And a lot of people would argue that that's a better approach, because the concept of selling insurance to someone who's already gotten sick is like selling auto insurance to somebody who's already had an accident.
And I apologize, I do have to jump in very briefly, Scott. What do you make of this deal and whether it's going to happen or not?
It is. If it wasn't so serious, it would be hilarious the lengths that Republicans are going to try and cobble this together, and they are failing miserably. Listen, the fact is that this plan is going to cut tens of millions of people from their health care. It's going to reinstate where having a pre-existing condition makes it financially impossible for you to have coverage. Their one talking point that they've offered for here's the solution, selling health care across state lines, is not part of this plan. I think, two things. One is that the idea that there's an exemption for members of Congress and their staff, and Rick, you know about this, having sued on this notion before with Ron Johnson. And second, the fact that we have a congressman up in the northeastern part of Wisconsin, Mike Gallagher, who has not had to go on the record about whether or not he supports this plan or not. It is ridiculous. And if anybody in the media is listening up there, can you call Mike Gallagher and see where he's at on this plan?
Well, we will leave it there because we have 1 minute to go. Thank you both very much for being with us, Scott Ross and Rick Essenberg. Bill Martins is here. And Bill, I know we haven't made the goal yet, but we're getting closer.
That's right. We need 14 more in the next minute or so to reach that goal. So make your gift to support the programs you enjoy. Your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes a difference.
I think Scott Ross's challenge that if you find both the guests to be blowhards that you should double your pledge is working. So do make that pledge, because you want to hear current issues discussed and debated with many different guests from many different perspectives. You want to keep track on what's going on in Washington, D.C. and at our state capitol building as well. Make that pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we're going to do it again Friday at 8 o'clock during our normal weekend review. Yep. We've got a couple of people lined up already to debate the rest of the news. So go ahead and make that pledge of support, and we'll keep discussing the news. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Any pledge is appreciated. Every pledge is important. You are the most important source of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.